On this edition of Retronauts, Blue Blue Skies. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Retronauts. It's me, Ray Barnholtz. I'm on board for this one. And with me, as always, is Bob Mackey.
Hi, everybody.
Jeremy Parrish.
That's correct.
And our special guest this week, an old colleague, old friend, old co-worker from Polygon, Matt Leone.
Yes.
Yes. Hi, Matt.
I'm confused because you made it sound like we all worked at Polygon, but...
No. I should... There's a semicolon in there.
I understand.
So, yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, no problem. And I have Matt here because this week we're talking about one of my favorite subjects, arcade racing games. And I believe it's an affinity of yours too, Matt.
Pretty much anything arcade.
Right, sure.
I'll take this slice, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when I do the Babunga Bunga episode, I need to call you.
Yeah, I like arcade racing games. And I mean, since we're talking about a whole genre this time and not like a series or something or a developer, there's like half a billion different arcade racing games to talk about. But my affinity, my sub-affinity for the affinity lies in, you know, like the 80s and 90s kinds of games that I'm more familiar with. If I just want to say to you guys, you know, like the question is, what is an arcade racer, racing game? I mean, I have my own sort of definition. I think it's like a sort of unrealistic realism, sort of trying to replicate the feel of driving a real car while still being fast and flashy because it's an arcade game and you need to draw people and get your quarters in and all that. Taking what's familiar and just sort of simplifying it, or, you know, in some cases, you know, going over the top with it. And also, you know, some of the games we'll talk about are not exactly strictly racing games, not laps and all that. They're just about, you know, driving, and they feature vehicles of some sort. So, I mean, does that sound about right to you?
Yeah, I think it's like an expanded realism, because you don't see a lot of them and they're just like crazy, go as fast as you can. Usually they're all kind of rooted in some kind of reality.
Yeah.
At least most of the ones I saw on your list.
Right, yes.
So, but yeah, and it's kind of weird because you would think people would just take them and just kind of go crazier and crazier, and as these things go over time, just get like as fast and as crazy as they can. But I think most of them, even these days, are much more kind of rooted in reality.
Yeah. So, like, a lot of the games that I wanted to talk about were more like 3D or attempted to be 3D and that sort of thing. But, you know, this all did start at a certain point, and I think that was basically in the 70s when games themselves sort of started out. And I think one of the earliest examples of a racing game in the arcade was Atari's Grand Track series, which were, you know, very simple, basic monochrome 2D racing games. It was basically like a picture, not a picture, but like, you know, a very crude representation of a curved racing track, and you sort of move your cars around there, and it may look a little bit, you know, puttery.
So this is a digital experience. It's not like those old arcade games that was like a picture of a car and a stick.
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
it's like, Watch Dawn of the Dead. I think one of those is featured in that movie.
However, you know, Atari also made Night Driver, which is, you know, sort of spiritual advance of that sort of racing genre. And they did, like, put a picture of the dashboard or the nose of the car on the screen, on the bezel. So that, because the game itself doesn't feature any sort of car, it's just basically, like, you going first person through these crudely done curves and twists.
Yeah, I mean, that game was all about using minimalism to create a convincing illusion.
Yeah.
I mean, it was Night Driver because it was basically like creating white dots on black to give the sensation of a road.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a huge fake out. And to me, that feels like the decal is, you know, kind of fits right in the spirit of that game.
Yeah. It does hark back to those older mechanical games that were just like, you know, a picture of a car on a carousel, basically.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they couldn't quite let go of that because games were just too early then. But, you know, going back to like the Grand Track, you know, which was iterated quite a few times by Atari and also their offshoot Key Games, which we talked about in an earlier episode. But, you know, the tracks in the games themselves, you know, they're not like simple ovals or anything. They do have some thoughtful design put in them, you know, because they want you to be challenged by the different curves and turns and whatnot. And that sort of like became like even more elaborate than like games that came after it. I'm thinking like Sega's Head-On, which was technically like a maze chase game, but it featured cars pretty heavily, and that was just like, you know, square columns and racks of, you know, mazes that you had to just go through and get all the dots and not die.
Was that the game that you applied directly to the forehead?
Oh boy.
Love it. But yeah, it was iterated, as I said, and then it sort of evolved into Sprint, another Atari game, and they improved the graphics on that, but the same sort of concept. And then sort of rebooted in the 80s, like almost 10 years later, as Championship Sprint, which again is not exactly overhead as the Grand Track games were. I mean, they sort of tried to make like a three-quarters view, add more perspective to the graphics. And
but it was kind of RC Pro-Am ish, wasn't it?
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's very much a bird's eye view. You see the whole track still, and you just race around there. And that, it's actually kind of like one of my favorite arcade racing game formulas, because I love Championship Sprint and Super Sprint, which came after it, very similar to it. And then even like Super Off-Road, Ivan Iron Man Stewart's Super Off-Road.
Yeah, that's the one I was trying to think of.
Yeah.
That had like four steering wheels in the front panel, and
that's one of the greats, I think.
And to me, that's part of the definition of an arcade racing game, is it does have that unique arcade experience that you get from the specific hardware for it.
True.
Me, like, arcade racing games are not much fun on consoles just because they lack that tactile sensation that you get from the steering wheels and from an actual gas pedal. Like, I know you can set up a home theater kind of like that, but it's not the same.
Or if you're lucky, you can buy the steering wheel for the console, and if you really care enough. Yeah, exactly.
Well, at this point, you can almost buy the cabinet for less.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah. But yeah, Matt, did you at least play Super Off-Road, or...?
I did. I mean, I don't remember too much about it. I remember the four wheels and kind of thinking it was rare to see a four-player arcade game. Yeah. So that was cool.
I was never any good at that because I just wanted to spin the wheel, even though that's not a good way to play.
It never stops.
Right. It just kept going and going.
Right. Yeah. You and like any other like small child that won't came up.
I wasn't
it.
A small child at that point.
Hey, no, it's still fun is what I'm saying. It doesn't matter how old you are. I became pretty obsessed with like the console versions, you know, on Super NES, and I even bought like the Game Boy port. Like,
that's dedication.
Yeah, I know. Well, I made a lot of bad Game Boy decisions, but it was still a good port. And yeah, that was like the one that stuck out in my mind. And like later I got like the NES port of Super Sprint by like Tengen. It's like, oh, it's just like this. It's great. Yeah, I love that too. I really like that formula. And it all started in the 70s there with Grand Track. And then there was Night Driver, like we said. Night Driver also had like one of the earliest examples of like a sit down cabinet, which was sort of car shaped, not like exactly like a car, more like an interpretive car design. But that was like one of the earliest examples of that, sitting down and with the steering wheel and having that sort of immersive driving type experience. And I haven't actually seen one in person. I doubt many people have, but yeah, it seems like Atari kind of, you know, they were thinking the right thing when they made it like that. Night Driver was also ported to the 2600, I believe.
I had it.
It was released. Yeah. Yeah, I have it too. And I mean, the arcade game itself was so simple. It's just, you know, those white dots forming a road. You don't really need to do a whole lot more.
Do you know if they put a car on the screen for the 2600 version? I have a feeling they did something.
I believe so.
Yeah, I just looked at the shots. Yeah, they did. Yeah.
And it was like it was a paddle controller game as well.
Right. Yeah. Also on 2600, Activision made Enduro, which was sort of a bit like that. It was another game where you sort of take a car and you just dodge the oncoming cars. That was around the time of the Pole Position, which we'll talk about as well.
But if you don't mind me jumping in, like, I love Enduro because there's like weather effects you know, day and night cycles and things like that. It's really impressive for a 2600 game.
Yeah, it's actually like one of the 2600 games I can still stand.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, because I'm a youngin. So yeah, Pole Position, I think, kind of comes next in terms of like milestones for this genre, because Namco came out with this in like 82, and it had that faux 3D look of, you know, the road going into, you know, the horizon. And you have the car looked like a car compared to everything else. You know, the road looked like a road, and, you know, it's all very fast and smooth as well. It was sort of like, you know, a lot of video games before that, you know, if you added anything more elaborate, it would just be really slow and pokey. But here was Pole Position, which was really very fast and looked, you know, so far ahead of anything else before it that it really gained some notoriety. Oh, and it also had voice samples.
Mm.
Prepare to qualify.
Oh, yeah.
That sort of thing.
And there was a song about it on the cartoon.
And there was a cartoon with a song about it.
Right.
Yes. That was that the...
I think it was part of Saturday Super Saturday.
Saturday. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I've... Too young to experience that, but I don't remember.
Sorry, I thought that was the lamest of the cartoons in the Saturday Supercade.
I can imagine so. I remember, you know, reading bits about it, and it was just like, yeah, just some sort of trying to make action racing out of that. But Pole Position was really just super big, because who wouldn't be floored by all those flashy bits of it, because nothing else like it had been seen. And so I think after that, in Japan anyway, a lot of other developers just tried to make their racing games like Pole Position. Although there was also a lot of like top-down view racing games that came out of Japan as well.
Yeah. I know Nintendo had Mach Rider. Was that a arcade game at first?
No.
Okay.
I wasn't
sure if they developed that for the arcade or not.
No, that was made for the Famicom.
Yeah. I think it was kind of a like an answer to Sega's Hang-On, wasn't it?
I suppose so, yeah, because, yeah, motorcycle-based, but it was also like, you know, you can shoot stuff. It's basically like a post-apocalyptic setting. Right. And
it's kind of the pre-answer to Road Blasters.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about Road Blasters, don't you worry.
Yeah, that's fine. But yeah, again, with Pole Position, it was like, it was kind of the leap that the genre needed, because I think things would have just been like sort of almost like Grand Track. It would have been all these top-down games, bird's eye view games for quite a while if, you know, somebody at Bold as Namco had not stepped in. They're moving real fast. They're the only ones who can get there on time. Never too far behind, they're always fighting crime. Undercover and face an adventure in the danger zone. Pretty soon they'll be off on a mission. Come and watch them go. What's behind this control? But after Pole Position came Sega, and they wanted to do their own thing thanks to a designer named Yu Suzuki. And so, Hang-On, Outrun, Super Hang-On, and then Enduro Racer, no relation to Enduro. Enduro Racer is kind of like a dirt bike version of Hang-On. But all those games came out from like 86 to like the end of the decade. And they all looked pretty much the same, but they all use that same effect of, you know, faux 3D stuff and being very fast and exciting. And, you know, I think Yu Suzuki kind of helped it all along by the fact making it sort of an audio-visual experience, not just the graphics, but, you know, including some nice music in them, especially in Outrun. People remember Outrun's magical sound shower. Those sort of became iconic of Sega's arcade development at the time. It's like, oh, it's another one of these 3D racing games. How great. Mm-hmm. And that was basically, I think, them responding to Pole Position. And
I have one thing to add, Ray.
Yeah.
Can we go back in time of year and talk about Road Avenger?
Road Avenger, was that? Oh yeah, was that around the same time? Yeah.
It was 85. I just want to look it up, okay. Make sure it was an arcade game first. But I mean,
please, yes.
It is a full motion video game.
Yeah.
But it's the amount of work that went to that animation is astounding, because it's a constantly moving road that is hand drawn.
Yes.
I mean, it's just like Dragon Slayer, where you're like stitching together scenes based on actions. But I watched a playthrough of it, and it's about 20 minutes long. It's worth seeing, because I just like, I want to see this game made in real time. You know, because
right.
It's just the action is just so like way over the top. Like a bunch of crazy car otaku got together,
yeah.
And we're like, what is the most insane things you can do in a car? Drive up a mountain, like fight weird punk bikers, do all that. I mean, it's barely a game, but I just wanted to mention it because it's sort of like in the old tradition of like put a sticker on the monitor and now you're a car. It's all first person perspective. Yeah. Hand-drawn animation. It's amazing.
Yeah.
The guy who made that, or the one of the main guys, was the guy who went on to make Double Dragon and like a bunch of the Kunio-kun stuff.
Oh really?
Oh, yeah. Is he the guy who's running Millionaire now? Or
millionaire. Well, they're not millionaires.
Yeah, it's kind of I'm not even clear on
you mean Ploffit.
Right, yeah. His company is Ploffit, who works with Million on all the Kunio-kun stuff.
Right.
But, got it.
Yeah, like the Laserdisc games that were popping up in like the early 80s from then, yeah, they definitely tried to do other things like that. Not a whole lot of racing games, actually. Like Road Avenger is like the really big,
only
notable
think of that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Everything else was like, oh, here's a spaceship flying through psychedelic land, or everything else is like Dragon Slayer, you know, hero tries to save the princess type of stuff. So yeah, Road Avenger for sure, and that's you can still buy that.
It was at California Extreme this year.
Oh.
And it was terrible.
Does it have a cockpit you sit in? Like, how does it control?
They might have been the original. The one that was there was just a stand up.
I couldn't find an image on my phone.
Yeah, they ported it to iOS. So
oh really?
Probably Android too. I don't know.
Okay, I'll check that out.
But yeah, they ported those out. So if you really need it.
I want the highest quality version of that animation.
So, yeah,
you'll enjoy it more if you just like watch a playthrough.
Yeah, I'm sure that's an option in the game, or it should be at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, that usually is.
Anything else I may have not mentioned yet?
Where does the speed rumbler fit into all of this?
Speed rumbler.
The debut of Super Joe.
Oh, yes.
Oh, God.
That's right. Yeah, I don't have a year for that, but that's definitely in the 80s.
It's 85.
Yeah, it's like one of Capcom's
maybe
earlier.
84, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so Speed Rumbler kind of, to me, fits into that top-down action combat car
right.
genre, along with things like Bump and Jump and mm-hmm. Spy Hunter.
Yeah.
Which, personally, I always found more interesting than just pure racing games.
For sure.
Because there were kind of this, you know, there were these outside objectives beyond winning the race. You wanted to blow things up, save the day, avoid uh-huh. enemies.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, my God, yeah, Bump and Jump. I love the NES version. That's sparked my love of jumping cars, for those of you who know anything about me. And the arcade version, not so much, it's a bit too rudimentary, but the NES port was really great. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the Speed Rumbler featuring Super Joe. And Capcom also made Mad Gear, which was very similar.
Someone tell me what Speed Rumbler is.
Speed Rumbler.
Just like an overhead perspective?
Yeah, like Jeremy was saying.
I'm just trying to get an image of it in my head.
Yeah, very Spy Hunter-ish. That was Capcom's first attempt at that sort of thing, back when they were still fledgling.
Mm.
So yeah, there was also games like that, for sure. Spy Hunter, from here, from America, which of course had that nice rendition of
right,
the Peter Gunn
right.
theme.
Some of the first licensed music.
Uh-huh. It was actually licensed.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that wasn't a public domain piece, so they couldn't have just said, yeah, the hell with it.
Yeah, true.
So I'm pretty sure that they licensed the Peter Gunn theme.
Could have been, yeah. Could have been just Mavericks, who knows. We moved from Sega and Yu Suzuki's games in the late 80s, and that was also like the time when we were transitioning to the 90s, and people were starting to experiment with not just like faux 3D with like 2D graphics, but also working with actual polygons mm-hmm. and creating, you know, quote unquote virtual reality sort of games. And there's two games from like the same year that are like really important in that. And the first is Winning Run from Namco, which was released in 1988, I think only in Japan. Maybe some people may have imported it here, but as far as I know, it was only in Japan. But that was like basically an F1 racing game, like so many others.
Sounds like it should be a baseball game.
I know, yes. You're right. Yeah.
That's really confusing.
Pick up the winning 11 on your way to winning.
Yeah, it is. It's also the name of a Ken Griffey game. So yeah, 1988, this is like, some people think like virtual racing, which we'll talk about, was like sort of the progenitor of those polygonal racing games, but this actually came a few years before it, and admittedly, like, the graphics are even more rudimentary than Virtua Racing. Like, Virtua Racing looks like Forza 5 compared to this. But it was really just like a showstopper again, because Namco was just like, okay, we'll go from pole position to this, essentially, and it seemed like such a big leap. But again, I don't think it made it out of Japan, probably because it was just so expensive to make and produce, and it was basically only existed in like 1988. They made like an updated version with like the Suzuka track on it, but that was it for them for a little bit. Like, they made Final Lap after that, which was another F1 racing game, but that was faux 3D 2D graphics and more adaptable, of course, and that lasted a little bit longer. They made some sequels for that. But then, coincidentally, you know, over in America, Atari made Hard Drivin', which again was a polygonal driving game. However, it was kind of like the opposite of Winning Run. It was not just racing. It was just pushing basically any kind of realism out the door a little bit in favor of just like driving fast, driving down these sort of country looking roads and going through loop the loops and over ramps and banked tracks and stuff like that. And I'm sure people have some experience with that. I know I do. Matt, did you?
I think it was really popular too, at least in America. It's almost like,
right.
like people wanted to buy American cars or something. But I just remember it being really slow.
It was
true.
Yeah.
Like, I think the tech couldn't handle what it was being thrown or whatever. So
yeah,
it was kind of interesting. Like, I used to always see it at this pizza place I went to. It was like next to the fighting game machine, and like no one ever played it. And when they did, they would just like get stuck, and the car would take like 5 seconds to fall.
Yeah,
around.
Yeah. That was
it was cool for what like it was going to become, but it was kind of one of those like ahead of time or whatever.
True. No, they made Race Drive and after that, but that pretty much ran the same, right? Like, it wasn't much faster.
I don't remember, but probably pretty similar.
I only played Hard Drive, and it was actually at a bowling alley my family went to occasionally, and it was nestled in between like Black Tiger and some pinball machines, so it felt like this weird piece of alien technology.
Yeah.
And as a little kid who doesn't know how to drive or didn't know like the logistics of driving, it was a giant investment, because this game cost $1, at least at my bowling alley. I feel like that was a standard, because the machine probably cost a lot of money.
Jeez, yeah.
And this is when all games were a quarter. The 50-cent thing hadn't kicked in yet, so it was a huge investment. I think I played it once, and the same thing happened to me that happened to Matt. It's like, I don't know how to drive. This thing is moving like a slideshow. It's completely disorienting. Disorientating? I don't know. Make up a word that describes my feelings on this. And
You need to spend a few dollars to really learn it, because like otherwise you're just going to crash a lot or run out of time.
Yeah.
I think if you go off the designated track, like the timer counts down, and you kind of have to You start to panic, or at least I do, to try to get back on the road, because you're running around in the grass now.
Yeah, I feel like it's possible to waste your money within seconds in that game. Just it shuts you out.
Another bad purchasing decision on my end. I bought the Super Nintendo version of Race Driven, which, talk about slideshow. You have not seen slideshows until you've seen Race Driven on Super NES.
You know, the amazing thing is that they put together a prototype of Hard Driving.
That is correct.
That has been put out recently through the Lost Levels.
For NES. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And I haven't messed with that, because apparently you need actual hardware. It won't work on an emulator, but supposedly it's really kind of amazing that they could even pull it off. And it's not just like, you know, like images of the track being kind of run in slideshow format. It is actually 3D objects that you're racing along. Yeah.
But it's one of those things where they're basically just like working with the TV tube to basically pull it off.
Yep.
And so that's why you need the real hardware. The thing about Hard Driving was that it did have a bit of realism to it, because they tried to make the car itself look or act as realistic as possible. It, like, the arcade cabinet featured like a key in the ignition and like a gearbox on it, a full gearbox, not just like high and low. So they tried to make you feel like maybe you were driving your own car. And of course, I had that nice brown dashboard of the time on it. I think it sort of telegraphed the humor or the goofiness of like arcade racing games to come from America. I mean, it's not super cartoony or anything, but the fact that when you crash, you get an instant replay, and you could see your crash again from another angle. Like, there's a goofiness to that, and there's kind of an enjoyable part of that, and I think that sort of heightened its appeal. Again, at least to me, as a kid who was also, you know, sort of into cars in general, like, that was an amazing game, and I played it every chance I could get. Not a lot of chances, but hence the crappy Super Nintendo version. But that also, much as like how Pole Position was like the big turning point for like Japanese arcade racers, I think Atari, the next stage for Atari in that sense, was Hard Driving. However, like, there weren't many polygon based racing games after that really all over the world, because at the time, you know, it was getting too expensive. But later, of course, we had Sega and Yu Suzuki coming back in the 90s with I'm gonna sneeze.
Virtua Racing.
There we go. Bless me. Yes. Virtua Racing was basically Yu Suzuki wanting like better 3D worlds in arcade games, so he basically went to an industrial flight simulator company to make it happen.
I didn't know the story behind this.
Yeah, he went to GE Aerospace to help fashion what would become the Model 1 board, which would render these real-time polygon graphics at a high enough speed and with enough detail. GE would later become like Lockheed Martin and also help Sega out on their other 3D boards at the time.
I did not realize all that.
Yeah. So that all worked, and Virtua Racing came out, and I guess, you know, at the time when everybody was talking about virtual reality and how we're all going to be using it, at that point in the early 90s, like, to see something like Virtua Racing, which also, you know, had big letters VR on the cabinet, like, that probably did a much better job of bringing in crowds than I suppose Winning Run could have.
Yeah.
And, you know, it did help that it moved very fast and was much better rendered than anything that came before it.
Super impressive cabinet, too. Like, the deluxe setup had, like, you know, the monitor up top kind of, like, showing what the four people were doing, and
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
That was also, yeah, Sega's experimenting with those deluxe cabinets. Yeah.
What I remember about Virtua Racing was the camera select, how you could go from basically an overtop view to a first-person view, and like there were two in between or whatever.
Which they called the VR buttons.
So yeah, I wonder if that's like the first 3D camera in the game, or one of the first 3D cameras.
I thought Major Havoc, is that what it was called?
Oh, yeah.
You could do that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And like
so that's way back 10 years before.
Right. And one of the earlier like colored polygon games was iRobot from Atari.
Right, right.
But just the idea of camera angles in games like was pretty crazy.
Yeah. And like in that sense they added a tactical advantage. Like most people agreed on like the number 3 view to be like the best one because you could see the most of the track ahead of you.
Right.
So
Yeah, the winning run Virtua Racer thing kind of, I don't know, it reminds me of a feeling I've always had that Sega's real rival was not Nintendo. I mean, Nintendo was, you know, their console rival, but that wasn't where Sega's heart was. Sega's heart was always in the arcade, and there their rival was Namco.
Yeah.
And the two companies were always just like neck and neck competing to outdo each other with the same concepts.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And like, yeah, Namco was huge, especially in the 80s. I mean, they were probably, like, in terms of the game industry, maybe even, like, number two to Nintendo. Because everything they were putting out in the arcade, to some degree, was just, like, innovative to, in some respect. And once they started, like, really spending money and making those 3D games, like, yeah, that's when they really started to come into the picture there and gain some more notoriety. And then, of course, yeah, the Sega rivalry, I mean, it's probably like Yu Suzuki and everybody else there just looking at what Namco was making and saying, we can do that. We can do that better.
Right,
that back and forth.
Sorry, before we move on from Virtua Racing, I do want to mention that the Genesis had a port of it.
Right.
And it was one of two games that was advertised at $99.99.
Correct.
In 1994, 95, something like that.
Yep.
Do we have any familiarity with that?
I got it too.
Kind of dark magic did they work to get that to run?
I don't know about that, but I remember walking into a Target, seeing it mislabeled at $49.95 and buying it.
Right. Nice. You could have flipped that shit.
Oh, shit.
That was a happy.
I was not as lucky. I chose that over Phantasy Star 4, which was the other $99 game.
Man, inflation.
Yeah. But in Virtua Racing's defense, the reason for that was they basically made their own version of the Super FX chip for the Genesis.
Right.
They called it the SVP chip, Sega Virtua Processor, I believe.
Senior Vice President.
Yeah, that too. They stuffed that into an extra oversized cartridge made just for Virtua Racing. It's the only Genesis cartridge to look like that and function like that.
Yeah. And it was still just three tracks, right?
Yeah, I mean, they got the whole arcade game in there.
$33 a track, kids.
It just did not, you know, it didn't actually move exactly the same as the
arcade. I do want to, like, offer a controversial statement. I don't know if it is controversial, but I've always felt that Stunt Race FX was a much better game.
It was
Nintendo's answer to Virtua. Like, Sega put Virtua Racing on the Genesis, and they're like, we can do that better. And, like, it barely runs. It's, like, 15 frames per second. But I just went back to it recently, and I found that it still holds up. And if someone could, like, patch, like, a frame rate hack or something, I want to see how it would play. Because not only does it play really good, I also think it has one of the best unsung soundtracks. And I don't know who did it, but the soundtrack is so good.
Yeah.
I just felt like I should mention that.
No, please. No, that's great because, you know, I was into that game as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, after Mach Rider, it's like the only arcade-ish racing game I can think of that came from Nintendo proper.
Right. But I felt like with Virtua Racing, it was all just very straightforward. They're like, okay, we just made this work. Let's just do racing.
Yes.
Super Nintendo, Stunt Race FX, you're like going underwater through tunnels. You're like going up ramps like a skateboarder. Like it was having much more fun with the concept.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
I feel like there was more confidence there. It wasn't just we just made it work. It's like we can make this work, but now what can we do?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was very creative.
Yeah.
The underwater tunnel thing. Yeah, I love that.
Ray, I'm afraid you're forgetting about 3D Hot Rally and 3D Hot Rally 2.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'll take that, yeah. It's because it didn't come out here, so...
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I'm not familiar with it. Why would anyone else be? Yeah, you're right. 3D Hot Rally. So Nintendo did have more familiarity with that. But, of course, they did publish Rad Racer over here and RC Pro-Am, both games that I was also very into at the time. And, yeah, as far as, like, internal development... from like Miyamoto and whoever else.
Sure.
Yeah.
Was Stunt Race still Argonaut? Were they helping or was it just strictly Nintendo of Japan?
As far as I know, it was Japan.
Thought so. Yeah. And that was FX2.
No.
Really?
It was, yeah,
I thought it was FX2.
It was the first revision.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah, it was. Well, it doesn't run too impressively.
And also, it takes up maybe like 60% of screen real estate, the actual screen you play on. It's sort of like the Final Fantasy VII battle scenes, but even smaller.
That's why it moves as smooth as it does.
Yeah.
Relatively.
Yeah, the actual play screen is maybe...
It's windowed?
60% or 65%, yeah.
Huh.
And you can't turn that off.
Jump too far ahead into things, because we do have some stragglers, I guess, from the 80s that we can talk about, such as Road Blasters.
Yeah.
Yes.
That game was the best.
It was. It was.
It was a Spy Hunter with a Switch camera angle.
Right.
Yeah. Is this Atari?
Yeah. Okay. An Atari game.
Yeah.
By Atari Games, not Atari Inc.
Right.
Yeah.
And... So, yeah, basically it was one of those kind of classic arcade games where you had X amount of fuel and X amount of time, and you had to pass certain check marks by those points. But you had, you know, opponent cars on the road, and you could pick up weapons and shoot them.
Okay.
And, you know, you had to aim by steering your car. So in addition to driving well, you also had to, like, slosh around to shoot things and take them out of the race. So it's pretty challenging. It looked really good, like, really nice graphics. It was very kind of futuristic, even though you had a pretty 80s looking car. There were like these bubble cities on the horizon that you were driving toward, and they'd get bigger as you got nearer.
Yeah, I think it feels like they might have taken some cues from Mad Max a bit. Just
yeah, I guess so. But it was so much more colorful than Mad Max.
But yeah, I was thinking of that and like Mach Rider and how, you know, those sorts of post-apocalyptic settings you don't see too much of.
Road Blasters had a great cabinet. It was kind of creepy, and you could like go inside, and people wouldn't even realize you were in there.
That's not like any of the cabinets I ever saw.
Really, the sit-down one?
Oh, I only ever saw stand-up. Mm.
So I'd have to look it up to make sure I'm right on this, but I feel like I was in the sit-down one, and there's like a roof, and you can kind of like get lost in there and probably do inappropriate things. But I mean, that's why a lot of the cabinets these days are all very open.
Yeah.
Whereas back then, you had a few more things that were more kind of... I don't know.
I think some shady stuff went down in those Jurassic Park arcade game cabinets.
Oh, man.
With the curtains that you shut. Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah. So, yeah, Road Blasters was great. And Atari did make many other racing games that, resembled Road Blasters. I'm thinking of, like, Hydra, which was you are this mulleted guy, kind of looks like Razor Ramon a bit, and you're piloting this super speed boat, like night boat, just jetting down these waterways, jumping over ramps and shooting things, and very frustrating, actually, it got to be. Not as hard as Stun Runner, which was also very...
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Very heavy use of polygons, maybe not like... I don't remember if they were actually like hardware rendered or anything, but that was another futuristic sort of vehicle game.
Yeah, that one always, I don't know why, but it always kind of felt to me like a spiritual successor to Road Blasters, even though it was very different.
Yeah,
maybe that's just my bizarre teenage imagination.
Yeah, it makes sense a bit. And it was definitely not about shooting down things so much as just like getting past the challenges of each stage, because it had those weird physics where you could bank up onto these tunnels or the ramps or whatever came in on the track, and you had to like keep your speed high enough, because if you just went straight down to the track, like, you'd eventually lose speed or run into something to lose speed even more, and then you'd time out and game over. So Stun Runner tried to be innovative by introducing different kinds of physics as you piloted this sort of weird looking red spacecraft thing, and just like sliding down these tunnels and curved tracks. And
it was kind of the Sonic 2 bonus stages
writ
large.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. And also got a port for the Lynx, one of, I think, the only home port at the time.
How'd that turn out?
Well, probably a bit better than you would expect, but still not great.
I don't know. I think the Lynx was a capable system.
It was.
I didn't expect bad things from it.
Mostly the original games were the ones that were not as great.
Right.
Usually the ports were better thought out. Well, I mean, that's all I can think of. So let's take it to the next level. We're in basically the middle of the 90s now, after Virtua Racing, and again Sega and Namco are in their rivalry. And now that, you know, sort of real-time rendered polygons have become a norm, at least in the arcade space, things start to get very quickly improved. And in 93 and 94, Sega introduced Daytona USA, which was basically the follow-up to Virtua Racing. Very spiritually the same. It at least had the four VR buttons to it. Mm. But instead of like a F1-inspired courses, you are now a stock car, not really accurate to Daytona tracks, but it was licensed by the Daytona International Speedway Corporation. And this is, I think, the arcade racing version of Street Fighter 2. Like, this is really like the turning point where everything got really just like over the top and sort of, again, really pushed the unrealistic realism. And just by the fact that you have an official license, it doesn't mean you really have to adhere to it, as Sega very clearly demonstrated. The Daytona cars are, you know, stylized. They have big fat tires, and, you know, the tracks themselves are very sorts are very wacky. And the things you can do in them are very much unrealistic. And so I think this is where I will call upon Matt maybe to offer some thoughts about Daytona.
I mean, I think it's kind of weird when I think back on racing games in general, because they're so like tech dependent, because, you know, as time goes on, other genres kind of hold up, I think, better. Whereas it's hard for me to go back to old racing games because the new ones are so much prettier and faster and this kind of thing. And I think Daytona was kind of a turning point for that. It was the first one where you could look at it and think, like, they look like real cars. And this is like, okay, now it's very pretty to play these games. It's not just about playing them. But I like Daytona for, like, all the Easter egg stuff. Like, obviously the song and, like, you know, seeing Sonic in the mountainside. Right.
Wasn't there
like
a dinosaur in the game as well? I could be thinking of something else.
Yeah, maybe something else. You can also play with the statue of Jeffrey from Virtua Fighter. You can, like, stop in front of the statue and hit the VR buttons, I think, and then he'll sort of twirl around on his pedestal and quote-unquote dance.
Yeah, it was the first one that, at least for me, felt like it really had personality to it. And maybe, like, Stunt Race FX or some of the other home ones would. But as far as, like, actual arcade games, that kind of felt different to me.
Yeah, for sure. Because I think, like, the AM2 team in charge of it was just like, oh, now they're in their groove, basically. And now they can... they're very much confident. And now they have improved hardware of the Model 2, which... the big draw was like boosting basically the texture mapping capabilities, and not just the polygon counts, but now you could add many more textures to it and make things look even more detailed. And you know, I think you still have like these low polygon cars, but now they kind of have like an appeal to them, like a certain artistic appeal to them, because they still look okay.
And it holds up, too. Like, if you look at, like, the collector's market, Daytona goes for a lot more than a lot of the games that came after it, just because it was kind of the one that stood out at the time.
Right, and it stuck around quite a while, and many, many bootlegs made of it as well. There's another Street Fighter connection that were made, I think, even until, you know, like, the past decade, like, early into the 2000s.
Well, Sega even put out their own. It technically wasn't a Daytona game. It was called, like, Sega Racing Championship or Classic or something like that, which is basically the way for them to like, re-release Daytona in HD.
So, that was from, like, 2009, 2010?
Something like that.
Right. They re-released it into arcades on their latest hardware at the time. But it's basically just, like, an HD remastering of the game.
Yeah.
So they could, you know, sell it again. However, that was the version that became the home port recently for Xbox 360 and PS3. And I'd say get it, because Daytona is a classic for sure. And I think everyone should sample it. If not for the great racing action, at least for the wonderful, wonderful music by Takenobu Mitsuyoshi, who clearly is a man who loves his work. As you can tell, when you listen to the Daytona music, he sings in it, and just generally just like a guy who seems to be slightly in on the joke, I would say. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially these days, if not at the time.
Yeah, he seems like a pretty great personality, and you know, very willing to sing the Daytona music.
As was Ray.
Search
online.
Hopefully not anymore.
I tried to splice that into an episode a few months ago, and the video was lost in the IGN migration.
Really?
Yeah. Game videos.
Is it on YouTube anywhere?
Not that I could find.
Oh, man.
It's very disappointing. The article is still there on game videos.
Because I've noticed
But the video is not there.
I've noticed a lot of the old game videos, if they're embedded places, they don't work. But if you search for them just on the site, you can find them.
I looked on gamevideos.com.
Okay. That's unfortunate.
Ah, there we go.
Damn it, Ray.
You have to record it again. We'll do it to Sega Racing Classic this time. Or Championship. I don't know what it's called.
It's not that hard. Yeah. It's not hard to do it again. anyway, the counterpart due to Daytona was Namco's Ridge Racer. And again, this was like the big thing that Daytona was. It was many more polygons, many more textures, but it's also a different kind of racing game. It's not exactly based on any sort of real life racing circuit or what have you. It's kind of like loosely based on like the Japanese mountain racing.
I was gonna say, think about where the term ridge comes from.
Yeah.
It's a lot of mountain top driving.
Yeah. There is a, you know, very many ridge-like tracks, but, you know, the cars themselves are not like kids' sedans that they're racing up mountains or anything. They're numbered cars, so it's kind of an interesting interpretation. I must say, I've never really played Ridge Racer in the arcade. I think, like many of us, most familiar with the PlayStation port, which was meant to be very accurate to the arcade game, and I think it is. I mean, I went back and played the arcade version on MAME and whatnot later. But yeah, it was very much concentrated not on like the sort of over-the-topness that Daytona was, but more on just like technique and drifting and making sure that you stick through the corners and don't bump anything, basically, and make it to the end of the course.
I mean, I know drifting is a real thing you can do in a car. I don't recommend it, but was Ridge Racer the first game to sort of popularize that, where now it's like in every racing game? Every racing game is about power sliding and everything like that.
Yeah. I mean, even Mario Kart had drifting.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you're
in
right.
a very simple kind of way. Right. I don't think that really clicked until Mario Kart 64.
True.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, where they actually like honed it and made it a real gameplay thing.
And it said scree or whatever.
Yes. Free. To answer your question, I'm not exactly sure, but certainly Ridge Racer pumped it up to the fact.
Yeah, I don't know if it was the first, but it's the one everyone kind of credits with that.
Yeah. And the irony of that is that it's not very realistic drifting at all.
No.
It's almost very
arcade drift.
Very mathematical, I would say. Because once you hit the drift, it's like your car can't really screw up or go out of it too easily, I would say. And they actually even like enhanced that, quote unquote, enhanced that for all the sequels. Like, it becomes, like, the drifting looks so unrealistic in the new Ridge Racer games that you can't really believe it. But the games themselves look pretty good after that.
What I like about the first Ridge Racer, it's just it made you feel like you're on vacation almost. It had, like, the beach setting stuff, kind of like OutRun 2 did later, and I guess OutRun 1 as well, but in 3D. And just, like, that feeling of racing around, it felt like you were seeing stuff that couldn't have been produced before.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So Namco hasn't really given up on Ridge Racer. Did the Vita version actually come out?
Yeah.
Okay, I wasn't sure if that had actually been released or not.
Yes, for sure. Despite all of the grumblings from the public who were very upset that it basically turned it into a DLC fest.
Oh, I didn't know.
It's a very basic game that you have to buy a lot of stuff for if you want the full package, and it's very much like online-based as well.
Like, I guess they weren't at the point where, like, we're just grateful you're buying a Vita game, here's everything.
Yeah, basically. And now, like, the newest Ridge Racer is Driftopia, which is based on Ridge Racer Unbounded, which was not made in Japan. It was made by
Bugbear
game. But Driftopia is basically the free-to-play version of Unbounded.
What can you tell me about Ridge Racer canon?
Well, it takes place in Ridge City.
Oh.
And you race cars in Ridge City.
But the new one takes place in Driftopia, which I assume is different than Ridge City.
Actually, well, like in Unbounded, it's different parts of the city. So there's like a Bay District, sort of like those kind of names. It's like different.
I see.
It's a different world.
I thought Driftopia is where racers went when they died.
Yes, probably. Lots of crashing in that one. Lots of destructible environments.
I'm sure Burnout helped, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And any of the Criterion stuff. Should we, I mean, I don't know if you want to go into this, but what part of the 90s are we in?
It's basically still like 93, 94.
Okay.
And like after Daytona and Ridge Racer, like Sega basically, they kept going forward with different sorts of racing games. Now that they had this great hardware in the Model 2, and then later, they after Daytona came Sega Rally, which again was very much like a simplified kind of racing game. And it's like, although they simplify it, it's like they make a challenging sort of real life sport accessible to anybody. And rally racing is very challenging if you ever see it in real life or even try to like play a more sim-focused rally game. But I think the difference in still in the feel between like Daytona and Sega Rally is that, you know, Sega Rally cars, due to their nature, are just more mobile and fluid, and Daytona is very much rigid and just trying to make the turn on top of Sega Rally, trying to make the turn and, you know, not skid out so much.
Yeah, no, I like Sega Rally a lot. I think it was kind of a halfway point between that, and I forget the name, but some of the Codemasters games where they are rally games,
Colin
but they're a lot harder to actually get your way through them. So, like, an average player wouldn't have any fun with those, whereas, like, an average player could still have fun with Sega Rally.
Yeah.
This might be getting too late, but I was wondering if things like Gran Turismo were affecting the arcade scene, the arcade racer scene, but by that point, arcades were in their death throes. I just wasn't sure if the shift to more realistic driving games on consoles kind of mutated what arcade racing was or anything like that.
Yeah, well, I think you still basically saw a lot of arcade and sim-focused games on consoles just by themselves.
Yeah.
So there were, what are some games that did not come out in arcades but on consoles? Like Burning Road was sort of like Daytona inspired, but you had different sorts of cars and different kind of tracks. And Virtua Racing, for some reason, lasted a while. They made a 32X version.
Oh, right.
And then like a even further enhanced Saturn version by Time Warner Interactive, who also then ported Race Drivin' to the Saturn as well. This is only in Japan. Virtua Racing came out in America, but Race Drivin' Saturn port was only in Japan, weirdly enough. But yeah, later than that, like, the arcade style still sort of thrived, I think.
Right.
Because also, you know, later in the 90s, you had things like Crazy Taxi.
Yeah, that's right.
Which sort of...
I just feel like, I guess those games are just harder to bring home, you know, when the console standard had risen or had established something entirely new. Yeah.
It's because, you know, the console market's such a free-for-all. You can have, you know, those more realistic sports games and then the arcade-y stuff.
Yeah.
So often. But... Yeah,
Crazy Taxi was great at home too. It was one of the few that I don't think required a cabinet.
Right, for sure. And it's like really one of the biggest sellers for Dreamcast, at least. Yeah, so much so that they went and ported it to everything else.
I think the Gran Turismo thing is interesting because when you look at like how arcades died, like you were talking about, arcade racing games were the few things that like kept getting made. Even to this day, are still being made more so than pretty much any other genre. Maybe shooters, but it's kind of almost like they survived while everything else was dying around them.
Yeah, probably because it's just so easy to get a rush from them.
And it's easy to charge a lot because you got a big cabinet. Yeah. And like,
yeah, you don't really get that cockpit experience at home unless you have a lot of disposable income. Yeah.
Right. Plus, you can get the thrill of playing the Fast and the Furious licensed game.
Yeah.
Those games sold a lot of cars.
Yeah, for sure. You're far and wide behind. Trying to make a hustle there. You roll over the track, let's see some country roll. Now the crash coming out on turn three. Better brace yourself. Hey, are you alright? Somebody coming up behind you. Whoa. Do 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 do. You're burning up the tires, baby. Do 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 do. On that note, I do want to touch a bit more on like the mid-90s stuff. I mean, we talked about all the Japanese advancements, but there was stuff going on in America as well. And, you know, after, like, Atari and Midway were sort of slow to adapt to these 3D polygon games as opposed to Japan for, you know, any number of reasons. I guess because, you know, they were still in the middle of fighting game mania and trying to make the next Mortal Kombat or what have you. Or maybe just the budgets at the time. Like, these were not huge companies over in America, and they probably could not really fashion the reason to spend all this money to develop these high quality 3D hardware.
And there weren't that many companies. It was basically like Atari and Midway.
Yeah.
And they had like NBA Jam and Mortal Kombat and everything was doing so well. It maybe didn't incentivize them as much.
For sure. But I think the big turning point for there was Cruisin' USA from Midway.
Yes.
Which came out in 94 as the second of the Nintendo Ultra 64 based arcade games. Not really, because they still use
had
their
no
own
connection at all.
Right. Yeah. It was basically, yeah, that was just
there was a logo.
Yeah. But it was those things like, yeah, this is for sure going to come out on Ultra 64. And here's what it's going to look like.
It did.
Yes.
Kind of.
Okay. But yeah, this is headed by Eugene Jarvis.
Hmm.
And I think perhaps because of that, the flavor of the game is very off the wall at times. It's basically you cruising around the USA, although like there's like 20 some stages, I think, or something like that. But they don't all cover coast to coast. It's like you start in California, do a bunch of stages in California, and then some in like the middle states, and you skip like so many states, and all of a sudden you're in Chicago, and then New York, and then Washington.
If only traveling across the country really were like that.
Yeah, exactly. But again, like the aesthetics, sort of goofy aesthetics, really sort of were emblematic of the time, and I think other games that came out of this country after it. But it was very typical of American arcade games. You had digitized people, mm-hmm. you know, the crowds and the sexy ladies holding your trophies, and had very corny, terrible music.
Oh, the music. I mean, I've only played the N64 version, but that is one of the fartiest soundtracks.
Listen.
It's like musical farts in your ears.
Listen, you can joke about Daytona USA's music, and you can have some ironic fun with it, but pretty sure you cannot even enjoy Cruisin' USA's music halfway ironically.
No.
It's really that bad. And, well, fortunately, if you play it in an arcade, you probably can't even hear it
right.
to begin with. And, of course, Clinton joke. After you beat the game, you crash into the White House and get to have a hot tub party with Bubba.
That's hilarious.
Which was taken out of the N64 version.
Along with the roadkill, you can't no longer run over cows.
True,
in the N64 version. Yeah. There's still a bikini babe.
Yeah.
You want some really obscure Cruisin' USA trivia?
Please.
Do it.
The guy who drew the marquee with, like, the cars flying around and the, I don't even know what style that would be called.
Trapper Keeper?
But sure. John Yowsey, he drew the fruit on the Yoplait yogurts, like the strawberry and the peach and all that.
Sweet.
There you go.
Nice. I love it. Whatever works, you know? Yeah. So, like, a couple years later, eventually Cruisin' USA did come to N64, although it was a very, it was a competent port, it was pretty basic, and like I said, it was censored a bit, and it was dinged for those reasons, because, you know, after 2 years, people might have expected a little bit more out of the N64, and Cruisin' USA didn't really add anything content-wise.
Yeah, I don't know how the home versions did, but the arcade versions of USA and then World and Exotica, yes. like the sequels, they sold, like, amazingly
sure,
well. Like,
yeah.
these were the only games at Midway at the time basically keeping the company going.
Sure. And I love Cruisin' World. I think Cruisin' World's pretty great, even on the N64. I mean, it is very simple racing games. I mean, the cars slide around so easily.
Right.
It's not really...
Yeah,
it's definitely unrealistic realism.
It's not really, like, a designer's game. Like, if you're in the industry, you probably, like, look down on it. But then if you look at, like, the market, it's a very good example of, like, do what sells, not what people say are good.
It feels about as complicated as Rad Racer, honestly. You're just dodging cars.
Right.
You're not, like, planning turns or anything like that.
Right. Matt, do you think that sort of thing was conscious in Eugene Jarvis's mind?
Or I know that to this day it is totally conscious in his mind
because
he said that a lot.
Okay.
Like, I interviewed their company last year for some more recent stuff they were doing. Like, they just put out this X Games thing. We'll get to that. But, and yeah, they were totally, like... You know, they were looking at other games. We were talking about, what was it? I think we were talking about Afterburner Climax. And he was looking at it like, this wasn't Eugene Jarvis. This was one of his coworkers. But he was saying, like, that looks to me like a game designer's game, not someone who's looking at, you know,
it is. I sat in that cabinet. I had a friend tell me how to play it. And I feel like that is a high barrier of entry. As someone who's been playing games for, like, 30 years or whatever, I can't figure it out immediately.
And I think arcade games especially, like, if you're targeting, especially these days in arcade games, like, the audience you're targeting is very... simple.
Impatient.
Yeah.
Shallow.
Yeah.
Words.
To be clear, I am part of that audience.
Yeah.
Sure. I'm not looking down on that at all, but it's very much like you want to get everything you're going to get out of this game in 3 minutes.
Yeah. The guy sitting down doesn't want to learn how to drift, you know. He wants to play a fun racing game.
Yeah. I mean, I like fun games. It doesn't really have to adhere to any certain things as long as I find it fun. But yeah. So after Cruisin' USA, we sort of get a small... Oh, I hate to use the word renaissance, but it feels like that because so many of these spiritually similar games came out around the same time from these American companies, Midway and Atari. I think the next big one would have to be San Francisco Rush.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
Which was developed by Atari Games, but I think distributed by Midway. And it is very similar to Cruisin' USA, although it's maybe not as goofy or cheeky, but also much more focused on, you know, stunts and shortcuts and things that sort of became more common in, like, the console type racing games were sort of brought over into San Francisco Rush. Mm-hmm. And but it is similar enough to Cruisin' USA in that, you know, you're racing around a part of America. Also notable because, you know, like I said, these American companies did not put so much bank into developing their own 3D hardware. So San Francisco Rush, its 3D hardware was licensed by 3DFX, who you may remember from the Voodoo cards for computers and all that. So, I mean, that was part of 3DFX's big push, and they got their hands into the arcade market through that. Well, any other thoughts about that, Matt, anybody?
I mean, I remember liking all the shortcuts and, like, trying to figure out where they were, and it was first time that it seemed like a strategy guide really mattered. Like, I remember Tips and Tricks did stuff like that for some racing games, and I can't imagine the audience for that stuff was pretty big, but it seemed like something that was actually useful, finally.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like you can draw a line from San Francisco Rush to the Criterion games, racing games, just the same idea of, like, weird madcap fun and shortcuts and secrets and stuff. It wasn't just about the racing. It was about doing this extra stuff that you never find in another racing game, or you rarely find it.
Yeah. And, you know, I would argue that the nostalgia factor for San Francisco Rush is bigger than Cruisin' USA because I can't think of any kid who did not have an N64 not have San Francisco Rush or one of the sequels.
Actually, when I worked at a GameStop, the most plastic we had in the store was either N64 wrestling games or San Francisco Rush in N64 form.
I mean, who knows what happened, but, you know, good for them, I guess, for striking gold like that. That was followed up by Rush 2049, futuristic version.
Rush the Rock.
Rush the Rock as well. I was thinking about big steps here, big steps. And so another cousin to that whole thing was California Speed from Atari. We don't have to talk about that much.
Very generic.
Yeah. It was, guess what? You're racing through California again.
Like Atari was based here.
Yeah, how about that? So yeah, it's basically like the Cruisin' USA formula applied to the whole of California and not just, you know, the whole country. Kind of a blip on the radar, basically. After this, we move into like the turn of the millennium, later 90s, into the 2000s, when both the Japanese and American developers are sort of, you know, getting used to the 3D stuff and sort of going along their own paths. So, like, what I want to talk about now is pretty much a jumble of different arcade racing games from that time. Like, I guess I'll start with, like, Daytona USA 2, which sort of appeared out of nowhere in, like, 1998.
Yeah, it was weird how long it took, considering how popular the first one was.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think I've ever even seen a cabinet for it, or, you know, a version in the wild.
Right.
Jeremy's nodding his head no.
I have.
I've never even heard of it.
I get it confused with Super GT sometimes when I think of, like, the tracks. Was Daytona the one that had that big boat that was floating back and forth on top of you?
Yes.
That was crazy looking.
I think so.
But, yeah, and they had, it was very, like, pretty, but I think it just kind of... Maybe people were just still okay with the first one. Maybe they didn't need to upgrade.
That probably was it. Because I think, you know, if I called Daytona 1 like Street Fighter 2, this was like Street Fighter 3.
Yeah,
in a way. It came so many years afterward, and not everybody was too hot on it.
Yeah.
I guess I did sort of skip over Super GT, though, which was for the Model 3 system from Sega. And that was a great game, pretty fun, but not much to speak about as far as innovation compared to Daytona. But yes, very gorgeous.
Had that fish tank. Wasn't that like one of those that Next Gen put on a cover and was like, this is a real screenshot kind of thing?
Something like that, yeah. They did feature it on the cover, yeah.
Yeah.
That definitely got me interested in it. And yeah, that was one where I barely got to play it as much as I'd like to, and they never ported it to the home consoles, I guess because kind of a weird transition period between Saturn and Dreamcast, and, you know, maybe they didn't really feel confident enough in putting it out at that time. Mm. Of course, they would later upgrade Daytona 1 for Dreamcast, which is, I guess, you may consider that a mea culpa. I don't know. It was all right. But yeah, Daytona 2, again, kind of under the radar. But still with great music. Mm. Great new Mitsuyoshi music. Over in America, I think Hydro Thunder was a good one.
I love it so much.
98, 99.
Okay, as late as 2010... if you're in the Midwest, you can find a Hydro Thunder at every rest stop along the highway.
Really?
I swear to God. Not Cruisin' USA. Like, along with a filthy bathroom and disgusting food, you can find Hydro Thunder. And I would play it at every time because it was always there.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Do they still have Revolution X, or has that been has that been replaced by
what
Target
are the
Terror?
Pillars of the truck stop?
I feel like Revolution X was a pillar of the roller skating rink.
Okay, yeah.
Because music was the weapon there as well.
You know, just recently there was this, like, truck stop... like a series of truck stops that bought a bunch of Derby owners clubs and put them in there.
Oh,
it was just like
geez.
The weirdest possible
what?
Combination. Anyway, this is going off topic.
No, we gotta go there.
Hydro Thunder was really notable to me as a lazy person for not having pedals.
Yeah.
Push the throttle up and sat back.
Sure.
But just the idea of, like, boat racing games was great. Like, you know, we had Wave Race at home, but in the arcade, like this
what,
was a whole different
Hydra before that, right?
I feel you're, as a player, you're also given a lot more leeway because the body of water is often much larger than a road.
Yeah, it didn't feel like you were messing up, even if you were. Like, you could go a few feet out of the way and no one really care.
Yeah, like, that's one of the tenets, I think, that still kept the genre going. Mm. Is that people don't have to feel like they're failing all the time, basically. Yep. And they can feel like they got their money's worth.
Mm-hmm. And the XBLA sequel, or whatever you want to call it, I really liked it.
Yeah, remake, yeah.
Yeah.
Wait.
Hydro Thunder Hurricane?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know who made it, but I reviewed it for 1UP back in the day.
So that was another company. The main guy who, like, headed up Hydro Thunder went on to found another company, which made an arcade, like, pseudo-sequel called H2 Overdrive.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which didn't get too wide a distribution, but it's a pretty good game.
Yeah. We can talk about more current ones for sure. Like I said, this is a jumble. Like, I'm thinking of, like, Initial D arcade stage from Sega, which is based on the anime manga Initial D.
I mean, and there was, like, a huge, at least I know in Japan definitely, but even in America, there was a weird Initial D scene at some point. And it just seemed like, wow, I couldn't even approach it. It seemed like unapproachable for me as someone who didn't. Can anyone explain, like, what the heck Initial D is? And, like, a child.
Well, when you're talking about
basically, like, you know... The Fast and the Furious, but with bigger eyes.
And all the characters look like they've been hit by shovels. Wait, like, sorry. That.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I mean, when you're saying Ridge Racer and it's like driving in the mountains, that's kind of the appeal of
It's more realistic in that sense. I mean, it's more focused on that culture, and that's the fiction about it.
It kind of had the DDR disease of getting like 10 different versions over the next three
years. That's what confused me as an outsider, you know?
Yes. Yeah. We're up to, like, I think the canonical sixth one now, but still many permutations in between. Mm. Big scene for that, and it's worth noting just because it's so super popular. Some other, like, Sega outliers, like, we mentioned Crazy Taxi, but there were other wacky racing driving games like 18-Wheeler, American Pro Trucker.
Oh, yeah.
Harley Davidson and L.A., what's it called? I forget.
Riders.
L.A. Riders, yeah.
There was also some weird variant of Crazy Taxi that Sega made with an ambulance, and it wasn't fun. It was just sad, because when you lost, like, a child would die. It was just like, they could have made it more, I don't know.
What was it called?
I don't know.
Emergency call ambulance, I think?
Something like that.
Also, like, Jumbo Safari.
Yeah.
Vehicle-based. Yeah.
Oh, I can't believe they actually released that in America.
I know, right? For Wii and DS.
Can you imagine these days?
Yeah. Also from Sega, Ferrari F355 Challenge.
The printouts that you could pay?
Yeah, pretty much, I think, Yu Suzuki's own personal gift to himself. Because
he cashed that check.
Yeah, it's not unrealistic, basically. It's a very simish Ferrari game. You can only drive the one Ferrari and try to drive it properly through these challenges on the courses.
I have something to add. I'm sure you'll get to it. Arctic Thunder was basically Hydro Thunder, but they integrated bowling alley hand dryer technology.
Oh, yeah.
So you were air conditioned as you played. It was great.
That's when I mentioned that X Games thing that Eugene Jarvis's company these days did. That's the spiritual successor of Arctic Thunder.
It makes me wish, like, retroactively, they would add, like, a water mister to Hydro Thunder, just, like, to mist you when you hit big waves. That'd be awesome. I'm sure that would be too... too messy to deal with, though.
There was also 4x4 Thunder.
Yeah. Off-Road Thunder?
Was it that? Okay, whatever. Yeah. Same sort of thing. Yeah, that's about as well as we can remember that.
And let's not forget Rolling Thunder. another one of those Namco joints.
Mm-hmm, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait, actually, that does make me think of Lucky and Wild.
Oh, right. Yeah, Lucky and Wild.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's one of Matt Leon's favorites. Yeah.
It was really unfair. The second person just got to do one thing, and the first person got a wheel and a gun. The second person just got a gun.
It was asymmetrical, like Super Mario Galaxy.
I know. I just wish the second person got two guns.
Yeah, people should look up Lucky and Wild. And then that made me think of Chase HQ from Taito, one of their other big series.
But
there.
What of APB? That's APB, way in the past. Yeah, not the David Jaffe one. No,
that was top down.
Right, but you're still in a that still had like a steering wheel.
Yeah,
and everything. Yeah,
that's true.
I was thinking of APB. I just did not. Come to mind immediately.
Motor Raid, if we're jumping all over the place.
Okay. Yeah, so it's like a big jumble in that sort of period, and that's when developers were getting more used to that sort of technology, I suppose. And then on consoles, we had, you know, the first Burnout game.
But that... I think... go ahead, Ray.
No, go ahead.
I'm sure they... I feel like they were generally regarded as trash for a while.
Yeah.
Just like trash, cheap racing games, but I think Burnout. Smart people kind of picked up on what they were doing or trying to do.
Burnout 1 was pretty generic, but Burnout 2 was much more improved. And
Burnout 3 was where people were really like, oh, this is good.
Yeah.
Right.
And Rubbin.
Yeah.
Sega had a NASCAR Rubbin Racing game.
That's right. Rubbin Racing. Yeah. Yes.
What?
It was at least the temporary name. Okay. I don't know if it came out under that name.
Maybe the Japanese name.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. And it had nothing to do with Rub Rabbits?
No.
I wish. A missed opportunity.
I know. So yeah, Burnout, I just note that as like the one really notable arcade racing game on consoles. It's a shame it hasn't really shown up lately, but, you know, Criterion did a good job with the last couple of Need for Speeds.
Yeah.
Yeah, Criterion apparently lost a lot of people. Like, I think they said intentionally so. They like shrunk down, so it's kind of a different company these days.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what they're making, though.
And weirdly enough, I feel like they're trying to get away from the madcap action the games used to be about, when I think that's kind of a mistake. That's just me. This is kind of unrelated.
No, it makes sense, for sure.
Yeah.
Like, Burnout Paradise, I think, was sort of like the first indicator of that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Burnout Revenge is so good, though.
Oh, God.
But purists will tell you Burnout 2 is the best. Whatever. They're all good people. Come on. And then also, like, Outrun 2 from Sega, which, you know, came, what, 15 years after the original?
Did we even talk about Outrun 1?
I mentioned it as part of, like, the Yu Suzuki collection.
Right.
Did you have any thoughts on it, or?
I was just wondering if we mentioned it. I just don't remember.
Yeah, hang on, Outrun.
Yeah.
Just those cousins.
They're super scaling.
But Outrun 2, I just mentioned because, you know, it was a sequel that came so far after the first one. However, there were some like middling Outrun sequels and spin-offs elsewhere in the arcade and on Genesis, but here, you know, Yu Suzuki came back and sort of remade it, and it's very much, it's correctly done, I would say, because it really does retain the old gameplay of the original while still using it in contemporary using it with contemporary technology.
This is Xbox One, I mean original Xbox.
Arcade and Xbox One.
Okay.
The Xbox version came out, I think, like a week after Halo 2 or before it.
I know it was like 2006 or something. 2004.
Yeah. I made the decision to buy that instead of Halo 2. Never looked back. Yeah, Outrun 2 is pretty good as well. I think, you know, in lieu of getting like Daytona 3 or something, like that was a pretty good consolation, I think. And, you know, the Coast to Coast version is just packed full with stuff. Because it was developed by Sumo Digital, and they added a bunch of different modes on top of like the original arcade mode. And yeah, I think if you want a good contemporary Japanese example of racing games now, that'd be the one to get. Arcade style, I mean.
Yeah, huge power slides.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Very smooth and huge power
slides. Did the arcade, or maybe this was like an upgraded version, but like one of the deluxe arcade cabinets had like a girlfriend mode that you can like have your girlfriend like sitting next to you, and then it like grades you somehow.
It's in the home version. Yeah, like heart attack mode.
Maybe that's it. Yeah,
where the girlfriend in the car just gives you like a very simple task to do while you're driving on the road and just sort of like do it. Yeah,
yeah. I think I'm thinking of like there was one like super deluxe cabinet somewhere that, you know, had two seats, and maybe it was the same mode. Maybe I'm confusing it with like Let's Go Jungle or something.
Comes with a girlfriend.
Yeah, that's your prize.
Yes.
How about Mario Kart Arcade? I did not like it.
Yeah,
I feel like those like a real steering wheel and gas and brake pedals do not really work with the Mario Kart.
It gets a real bad rap.
I don't hate it. I just couldn't. I guess I didn't have enough time with it. But time with that game costs money.
Yeah,
they may be one of the rare examples of an arcade version being worse than the home.
Yeah,
well, version's actually a wrong word because it's not like it's the same game. It's a different game.
Yeah, made by Namco.
Yeah,
there's also F-Zero. I never haven't even seen that in the arcade. Was that even brought over here? The F-Zero arcade game?
Yeah, very briefly. But
super expensive though.
Yeah. The same as F-Zero GX,
yeah,
basically. Different tracks and characters, but same engine and all that. fantastic, by the way. That's actually my number one favorite GameCube game, F-Zero GX. And yeah, they really pulled it off with like remaking that world and that universe. And
the what I hear about the difficulty keeps me away. I don't know if that's true or not. I just hear it's an infamously hard game.
It's not like a huge difficulty spike or anything. It's okay. Just like if you want to play it really high level, yeah, you're gonna have some trouble. But like you can play a lot of it just fine.
That's reassuring.
Yeah, really exciting too. It had that like first person camera to it. That's just like perfect.
60 frames per second.
Yeah,
we totally forgot to mention F-Zero as a Nintendo game between Mach Rider and Stunt Race. Whoops.
Well, okay. Fair enough, but it just didn't come to mind exactly because, like,
it's different. Sure.
Yeah, it's different. Different enough. It's hover cars.
But we did mention Wipeout, so fair is fair.
Yeah, true enough.
Oh, wait, no, that was another episode.
Yeah, that was last week.
Oh, yeah.
No, actually, next week.
Oh, no.
Time paradox.
Yeah, I'm just going to fall back on what I said at the beginning. There's like half a billion games to talk about here.
Very good.
And we're not going to cover exactly everything. But I did want to cover things that at least started in the arcade mostly, hence things like that. So, I mean, if anything else from the past decade sticks out to you guys, please say something. There were notable ones, but not like we were all probably busy with consoles. And
yeah, the last arcade game or racing game I was really invested in was Ridge Racer Type 4, so it's been a long time. Since then, I've played, you know, Mario Kart, and that's been pretty fun.
It's weird.
I just kind of lost interest in racing games.
Yeah.
Is Nintendo the last developer to be making racing games now? It feels like it. Mario Kart. What's that? Oh, I mean Japanese. Wait. Yeah. Brothels isn't Japanese, right? That's Jarvis. Yeah.
Well, we can move on to the next part that I wanted to cover, which was like more contemporary stuff of like the past, you know, 8 or 9 years. Things, again, from America and Japan. And like Raw Thrills. Yeah. Matt, tell us a bit about Raw Thrills.
It was basically as Cruisin' Exotica became popular and all the other Midway stuff didn't, Eugene Jarvis kind of splintered off and started a new company, which was going to initially do console games. They were working on something, it was like a GTA style console game, but then that didn't work out, so then it turned into an arcade game, falling into very comfortable territory for them with Fast and the Furious games and a bunch of other games that are very much kind of the spiritual successors to Cruisin'. Like, the Fast and the Furious games, they have the license, but apart from that, they are Cruisin'.
I see, yeah. And they apparently still make a lot of money.
And they've made a lot of games. They've been around, I don't know, 10-plus years
now. They have Fast and Furious, Fast and Furious Superbikes, Fast and Furious whatever.
Yeah, Superbikes became its own franchise. Like, I don't even think it has the Fast and Furious license anymore.
Great.
And they have a bunch of them. And, yeah, they did, like, so they publish, basically. I don't know if that's the word they use because it's arcades, but the...
Distribute,
yeah. And
manufacture.
All that. For the H2 Overdrive and which is a company called Specular, who does those, the guys who did Hydro Thunder, one of them, started that company, and they've done 3 games. They have a Batmobile game coming out soon.
Yeah.
But yeah, Raw Thrills is like the only company really in the U.S. that's consistently making money and pretty much doing redemption and driving games, and they get a lot of different driving games. They get one or two a year. Like, they did a Cars licensed driving game.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Obviously, Fast and Furious and all these others. They did this X Games thing, which is basically an Arctic Thunder follow-up. basically just going back to anything that worked and saying, hey, we can make a HD version of that.
Sure.
Yeah. I feel like they're the last people that are making arcade cabinets, because the last arcade I've been in, maybe like a year ago, all I saw were Need for Speed and maybe Namco's Pirates of the Caribbean ripoff light shooter game. Was that Namco that did that?
Yeah,
that was like 2010 maybe.
Japan, you still have the occasional games coming out in the U.S. as far as like original games, it's pretty much just Raw Thrills. Companies like there is like Incredible Technologies, which does Golden Tee, and there is Global VR, which does a lot of like PC ports, but as far as like original games that are of any like particular note, it's pretty much just them.
Yeah, I think like in Japan at least, like Sega came out with a game called Sega Race TV, which was another kind of goofy racing game. Very, I think the aesthetic was like a American disco party kind of thing. Very off the wall, but I think also not very well received. Haven't played it because it's not really available anywhere near me, so I'd like to know exactly how bad it is, if at all.
More recently from Sega and Namco, I feel like I've been hearing more about light gun games than racing games.
Yeah.
Just like in the last few years.
And, you know, Namco very quickly made Ridge Racer a PlayStation series. Like, they put it on consoles after, like, the fourth one. third one. Mm-hmm. And so,
yeah, the fourth one was the one, the first of the Ridge Racers that was just developed exclusively for home consoles.
Yeah,
and had a different feel than the previous games, much more chill. Like yeah. Eurobeat, laid back.
Did that one come in a double CD case for no reason?
It did.
Okay.
No, not no reason.
No, yeah, there was a reason.
There was a demo disc in there.
Okay, some of them, there was no reason. They're just like, this will stand out, maybe.
Not just a demo disc, but they included an improved 60 FPS version of Ridge Racer 1.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
So, yeah.
That was the one with the JogCon, right?
Yeah. The JogCon controller.
That I did not understand.
Yeah.
And also Pocket Station support.
Well, oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Why wouldn't you?
I mean, it's 99. You got to get your Pocket Station ready. Yeah,
absolutely.
Right? Load it up.
I love R4. Maybe my sentimental favorite Ridge Racer game. And you can get it on PSN if you're so inclined.
Worth it just for the soundtrack.
So, yeah, I really couldn't come up with anything after, like, Sega Race TV, at least from Japan. So, like, the arcade racing aesthetic genre, whatever you want to call it, has sort of been left to consoles and, like, the big guns are what? Need for Speed, I would say.
Yeah.
And
Forza.
Gran Turismo.
Yeah, but those are more sim-based.
Sure. Yeah, that's true, yeah.
And, you know, I'm trying to think of something, you know, halfway unrealistic.
Well, Mario Kart, I guess you could say.
Mario Kart as well. And you know what? Mario Kart 8 actually looks really good, and...
That's what I heard. I'm too afraid to try it. I don't know why. I just kind of got burned by some
You've been hurt
Mario
too many
Karts.
Times.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, I liked 7.
Hmm. It was okay.
I'll
to my
what,
surprise.
I get knocked down, I get back up again. So I'm ready for Mario Kart 8.
They're never going to keep you down.
Yeah, no. And like Matt said, Rothrails is still in business, still pumping things out. And if you ever find yourself in an arcade or something resembling it, and you might find a Rothrails racing game there.
I think the Specular games are actually pretty good, if you're talking
Specular,
about...
Specular, yeah.
Which is...
so what...
So it's H2 Overdrive.
Yes.
Dirty Driving.
That's right. Okay, yeah.
And,
I did want to mention.
And then they just kind of secretly revealed this Batmobile game, which is apparently less of a racing game, more of like a combat game. I'm kind of curious to try it, but...
yeah, looks interesting.
Good stuff. But yeah, the Rothrails stuff is cruising.
Yeah.
All right. Just go to your local Dave & Buster's. I'm sure they'll have
it
everything.
It is funny, though, when you talk about like full motion, like or not full motion, but like showing people like digitized on the screen. Like, they've done that to the HD level now.
Yes,
so,
yes.
Like, the dancing girls are, like, oddly, like, clear. And it's like, they were funny in the old days when they were pixelated, but now it's, like, kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah. It's like they're right there with you. Yeah. Yes. Bold new future we live in. Yeah.
My racing waifu.
But yeah, that's pretty much, I think, all I can say about arcade racing games. And, you know, it was really just my excuse to celebrate, like, this aesthetic and, again, that unrealistic realism. And it's something that, you know, has sort of been fading slowly away. And as people rush to buy, you know, Forza and Gran Turismo and Need for Speed, and, you know, that's fine. Those are great games. I definitely agree with that. And... it's just sad that we don't have anything on the level of Daytona anymore.
Well, you got Sega... What's that game called?
Sega Race TV?
No. Sega. The one that's not Sega that they're making to look like Sega. 90s Arcade Racer.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Hmm.
That's right. That is, like, yeah. That's one little beacon of hope. The 90s Arcade Racer developed, I believe, by at least one Greek guy. But he had a Kickstarter for that and got picked
this.
Up by Nicholas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that'll be coming out on PC and Wii U and I think some other systems, and it is very good looking, and the developer is very much in tune with the Sega line of thinking from those 90s giants, and yeah, worth
looking
forward to.
That was one of those Kickstars I couldn't figure out. He wanted like 10 grand or something to make
it was like,
it was like,
hey,
like one guy,
yeah,
yeah,
it's like, hey, I can pull this off, yeah, I just need this much money. Oh, okay, I'll just get picked up. Okay, good. So yeah, I look forward to that, hope you do too. And yeah, let's close the book on this for now. That has been Retronauts. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Matt, very much for coming by.
Thank you, Rick.
Offering some extra expertise. If I think of anything else arcade-related, I may call you again. But anyway, you can find us on the internet all over, retronauts.com. Please find our episodes there. You can find information on the episodes, like what music we use and so forth. We're on Twitter, Retronauts, Facebook, Retronauts, SoundCloud, I believe, was also Retronauts, and YouTube.
I think we should clarify one thing. There are like 5 Retronauts on Facebook.
That is true.
I believe we're the one with the most people now, right?
There is a band called the Retronauts.
Right, but there are several ones that were started when Retronauts was at 1UP by just random people.
What's a big differentiator? The one with the most likes?
The most likes. I think we have like 700 or something.
Okay.
So.
So please check us all out on there. And as always, we'll be back next week with Retronauts Pocket. I'll be joining you again. And thank you, Bob, again. Thank you, Jeremy. Cool. Goodbye, everybody. We'll see you next time. Yeah.